DeAndre. Got favors on him. Puts it down, gets to the basket, flips it up off the high glass, fills it up. Count that baby and a foul. Fires down deep. Andre with the deposit. Dishes to Dre for the dunk. Oh, that'll bring the house down. Dish no. Tap Andre no. Follow Andre. Yes!
Your line has not been matched since 1963-64.
I'm sorry, you're trying to win basketball games, man. It's tough. You know, dropped another one. Get ready to beat a good team on Saturday. You know, when you want to win that bad, you're willing to do whatever. I don't even care about the stat line. I don't like losing.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are going nowhere, and the only real path forward with any sense of light, the only real path forward with any sense of the future, is to trade LeBron James.
LeBron James has not made a decision what he's going to do next season as of yet, and I've never known him to be such a prisoner of the moment where he would choose something as drastic as that. He has a no-trade clause for a reason, so he's not traded.
He felt like the Cavs could have gotten Paul George and Eric Bledsoe, and they didn't get him. I'm just telling you, LeBron is there, and he's like, we could have had Eric Bledsoe and Paul George, and instead we have a draft pick who I'm never going to meet, and we have Isaiah Thomas, who is very clearly hampered, and we have Jay Crowder, who's having the worst year of his career.
Well, let's see what happens here. Way, way up. Good night from Cleveland. Tome beats the Blue Jays with a 13th inning home run. There's a drive. Deep to right. It is long gone. Cleveland wins the game on a home run by Jim Tome.
The 2-0. A long drive to right.
This is what they do best.
Tommy drills one high and deep to center. Away, way, way back. Gone deep into the picnic plaza, and that might have even got out of the ballpark. Jim Tommy has just left Jacobs Field onto Eagle Avenue.
This ball is well hit to right center field. On the run is Bernie Williams. He's a spectator, though. This one's gone. And a drive to right. This could be a grand slam. It is. And the Indians are right back in it. Tommy takes Paul into the upper deck.
Tommy hits a drive to deep right center. Away back. Gone. Jim Tommy almost hit it beyond the lower deck in right center. His third homer in the series. He delivers. Tommy hits a drive to deep center. This ball is going. It is gone. Tommy two homers tonight. Four RBIs. He hit it to dead center. Swung out and drilled. Deep right center. Away back. Gone for Tommy. Number 52. Halfway up the seats in right center.
Jim Tommy, eighth all-time in homers with 612. 956 OPS, which is really impressive. And by my unofficial count, he's a top 10 first baseman of all time. Also played in the postseason 10 different times and holds a major league record with 13 walk-off homers. One of the great consistent home run hitters of our time.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is the Extravaganza back live and with you at 11 minutes after 3 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Hope you're having an outstanding day. And it's only going to get better because we have an outstanding show lined up for you this afternoon. My goodness gracious, please, technology, don't fail me now. We had a little bit of a glitch yesterday. Jim Cushlin, of course, held down the fort most capably. And hopefully we will not have any of those types of problems today. So much news to get into. So many things I want to discuss in the monologue, but I probably don't have time to get to all of them. It's just rough. But I tell you what, I just have a ton of great guests that we're going to talk to later. So I got to get as much news as I can into the monologue before we get to at 3:35. We're going to talk to Eddie Meissonette, brilliant commentator, editor-in-chief of the Sports Fan Journal, online at sportsfanjournal.com, and a Fox Sports contributor. We will talk to him about all things NBA, all-star selections, Cavaliers potentially being sold, LeBron James potentially leaving, how angry LeBron was reportedly that he didn't get Paul George in a trade for Kyrie Irving and instead got Isaiah Thomas, all of that on the table. 410 Dennis Manilow joins us to talk a little bit about the Cavs, and we'll talk to him more. Also about the signing of Todd Haley, former offensive coordinator of the Steelers, now to call plays for Hugh Jackson and the Browns. And Dennis is a big baseball guy, too, writes about the Indians for Cleveland.com. Maniloff will talk to us about the Hall of Fame voting yesterday, of course, resulting in four new inductees, which we will discuss momentarily. Then at 4:40, we will talk with head coach of the UT Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk, who remain red hot. How about the Rockets now? They are just killing it. They had another undefeated week, winning two last week against Kent State and Western Michigan. They hold on to first place in the MAC West. In fact, they are dominating the MAC West. Rockets, 6-1 in the MAC West. Ball State, Western, and Northern Illinois, all in second, tied at 3-4. There's a three-game cushion on that half of the conference already for in the loss column for the Rockets. Only Buffalo is exceeding them overall in the MAC, as Buffalo is 7-0 in the eastern half of that conference. So we'll talk Rockets basketball with the great coach Todd Kowalczyk. By the way, really big week for the Rockets, because they have BG on Saturday in the Battle of I-75 basketball style, and then they play Ball State, one of the three teams chasing them in the MAC West, on Tuesday. So all of that on the table for Coach Kowalczyk. Breaking news, I might as well just get this out now. It's extremely important, and I think it's freaking awesome. Breaking news out of New York, technically out of Stamford, Connecticut. What is going to happen, you ask? Well, let me see if
what
I can explain.
What more can you tell us about Vince McMahon taking another shot at the Pro Football League?
I can tell you, Max, that when the XFL broke up, he did not want to do that. I know he did not, but he had NBC, who was a half partner. He had UPN, which was broadcasting the games, and UPN supposedly wanted to loop that in with WWE, and he was going to lose money out of the deal, so he sucked it up and said, on my way. But anyone who knows Vince McMahon, he did not want to fail at this. And I don't know if this is because the NFL has had some issues. I think there's definitely going to be a play on the national anthem. I will call it right now. Every player in whatever this league is going to be called is going to stand for the national anthem. Based on what I know of Vince McMahon, there's a lot of challenges, though. The main challenge of the XFL, as our great documentary pointed out, was people at the end of the day wanted real football. Can real football be had with a base of players who are not NFL players? Yes, players can slip through, but are they good enough to make a league? When is he going to announce the start of this league? Is he going to give time? There's so many questions that he's going to answer today at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Right, and a lot of people want more football, and that's part of what everyone wants on a 12-month calendar.
So we do have confirmation. Vince McMahon, owner of the World Wrestling Entertainment Empire, who just recently took out or sold $150 million worth of WWE stock in order to finance a new venture. The moment he did that, the business world and the sports world all said, holy crap, Vince McMahon is going to bring back the XFL. Today, the announcement is official. McMahon says this will be the XFL, the same name, but it will not have the same gimmicks that it had 17 years ago. They survived only one season in 2001 when they promised to do everything better than the NFL. Regular cheerleaders, no way. Strippers acting as cheerleaders. A coin toss, no way. We're going to fight for the ball on a forced fumble, on a tossed fumble, till somebody separates a shoulder diving on it, by the way. All of the gimmicks that came along with the XFL, trying to pro-wrestlingize, yes, I made that verb up, trying to pro-wrestlingize football, did not work. That will be scrapped. This is going to be a serious attempt at building a competitive football league. He said he is the sole funding source for the league, which is scheduled to begin in January of 2020. So 2 years from now, we will have, or should have, our first season, first games of the season, the first season. They will have 8 teams around the country playing a 10-week schedule in the initial season. The initial outlay of money, literally, this is breaking news at this hour. We are just finding this out right now. The announcement was made at 3 o'clock, 3:05. The initial outlay of money is expected to be around $100 million, the same amount of stock, as I mentioned. Actually, I had heard that McMahon sold $150 million worth. He probably needs more for the startup ancillary expenses. And funneled into Alpha Entertainment, that's the company he founded for this project. McMahon said today in an exclusive interview with ESPN, quote, "I wanted to do this since the day we stopped the other one. A chance to do it with no partners, strictly funded by me, which would allow me to look in the mirror and say, you were the one who screwed this up, or you made this thing a success." One mark of the new league, McMahon said today, will be faster games. The ideal running time, he said, would be 2 hours. Most NFL games these days are pushing up on 3.5 hours. As for the timing of the announcement 2 years before the league's debut, many might point to McMahon's relationship with the president, Donald Trump, who this fall criticized the NFL for allowing its players to kneel and sit during the national anthem. McMahon said the players in his league will not be given the forum to take personal stances while on the playing field. McMahon's wife, Linda, heads the Small Business Administration in President Trump's cabinet. People do not want social and political issues coming into play when they are trying to be entertained, Vince McMahon said. Let me read that one more time, and I want to make sure that you hear it. People don't want social media and political issues coming into play when they are trying to be entertained.
Can you dig it?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Say that again, Vince McMahon. This is something I have been fighting about for so long. If you want to have a rally on the town square in which you live and complain about your lot in life or social issues or whatever, go ahead. But when it's game time, when it's work time, shut up, do your job, especially with the NFL picking favorites in such things. Remember, the NFL allows the players to kneel and make their political statements, but then when an AmVets group, an American Veterans group, wants to take out an ad in the Super Bowl program that says, please stand, with a picture of our flag, they rejected it, saying, no, we don't like to make political statements. Wait, what? You're making them every week that you don't find Michael Bennett or the rest of them. Malcolm Jenkins, let's see if he does it in the Super Bowl. Anyway, I digress. McMahon said, we want someone who wants to take a knee to do their version of that on their personal time. So do I. McMahon said, being the only owner of all the teams will allow him to do whatever he wants. I can say, here are the rules. And as long as you're playing football in the stadium for us, you follow these rules. McMahon also said he would preclude any player with a criminal record from playing for the team. Would that disqualify a former Heisman Trophy winner like Johnny Manziel? I think he better rethink this, because I can tell you right now, a year from now when they start having their first draft, I can already hear it, with the first pick in the inaugural and XFL draft, the Los Angeles whatevers select Johnny Moneyfingers Manziel. And you can already see him walking onto the stage doing the money sign, can't you? Doing the money fingers. That's the kind of star, caliber person, it will take for them to compete. They're not going to do it with the first pick. Here comes Brian Hoyer, who's flushed out of the National Football League. No. They need the second pick to be Heisman Trophy winner, two-time national champion Tim Tebow. They need stars. So we'll see if they bend on that criminal record issue. By the way, Cushlin, what is Johnny Manziel's criminal record all about? I don't recall, to be quite honest with you. I don't know. I literally don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, he was an idiot.
I knew that.
But I don't recall it being criminal.
It's in the story. It said it would preclude any player with a criminal record, which would disqualify Johnny Manziel. I don't know why. McMahon said, we are evaluating a player based on many things, including the quality of human being they are. If you have any sort of criminal record or commit a crime, then you aren't playing in this league. I assume that doesn't mean traffic offenses. I assume that doesn't mean minor things like misdemeanors, but probably felonies. That would be my guess.
Right. The only thing I could find is the misdemeanor from back in 2012, a little assault charge on there. But that's it was
I don't remember that. Who did he assault? What are we talking about?
It was when he was still at A&M, because it's according to Dallas County court records. His former girlfriend, I imagine, back at A&M. This is from...
Was he convicted of it, or did he plead out to it?
I can't remember. I'm trying to reread up on it.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll get to that. There's plenty of time. We're 2 years away from this league coming into existence. One of the main problems with the previous XFL was timing. The first games were played a year after the concept was announced. Adding an additional year, McMahon said, will allow for a better product. Teams will be formed in 2019. It's extremely important that we have time to get together and get them practicing so we can have a quality product, he said. One of the reasons he thinks he'll be able to succeed 19 years after the league first failed is because... Where do you get 19? It's 17 years. It happened in 2001. Oh, okay, by the time they play in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's where they're getting that from, yeah.
Is because he said television ratings no longer dictate success. To me, the landscape has changed in so many ways. Just look at the technology and companies like Facebook and Amazon bidding for the sports rights. Even if ratings go down, there's no denying that live sports rights continue to be valuable and continue to deliver. One of the ways McMahon envisions enticing major media partners is to offer something that the NFL hasn't, more creative feeds of the same game. I don't think people want to see the same thing when they're streaming as they see it on television. That's boring. I think fans want a shot in a totally different way. And when there's an immersive opportunity, that's more interactive to the game. He said, seeing the NFL's troubles, which included a second consecutive year of a decline in ratings, didn't have to do with the timing of his announcement. The start of this league has nothing to do with the NFL's troubles. What has happened there is their business, and I'm not going to knock these guys. But I remember this is a very different approach than 2001, isn't it? In 2001, it was specifically taking a shot at the NFL. They had Dick Butkus, an NFL Hall of Fame legend, going onto the USL field and grabbing a microphone and making fun of the NFL. No more sissy coin flips like they do over there. You want this ball, you'll fight for the ball, he said before throwing it out there for the fumble recovery contest. Let's see. I'm going to learn from their mistakes as anyone would if they were tasked with reimagining a new football league. NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy told ESPN the league will have no comment on this. Let's see. Over the next couple of months, the league will announce the 8 cities. Expected to be large and medium-sized markets where the teams will play. Team names will follow. Then will come the selection of players for the 40-man rosters. Salaries will be determined, but McMahon said players will make more money for winning. To me, that's common sense. Everyone in America lives when they perform. They get a raise or a bonus. That's capitalism. Although the season is only 10 weeks, McMahon said the contract will be a 52-week job so players can work themselves into the communities where they play. It's not clear whether star players, should they garner national attention, will be able to jump to the NFL. One thing we are not is going to be a develop. Oh, that's big. We will not be a developmental league for the NFL. McMahon said he decided to go with the XFL nickname, even though the new league won't provide the same gimmicks that were both a hallmark and a black mark on the original league. Quite frankly, I looked at a number of things, but nothing resonated like the XFL. There's only so many things that have FL on the end. And those were already taken. That's true. AFL, the old American Football League. WFL used to be the World Football League. What was the Euro League? What was the Euro League called? It was just NFL Europe.
Yeah, it was NFL Europe. Yep.
But they aren't going to have much of what the XFL had. We are not going to have much of what the XFL had, including the cheerleaders, who aren't really part of the game anymore. The audience wants entertainment with football, and that's what we're going to give them. That means popular nicknames such as 2007 Heisman Trophy Tim Tebow won't be given a priority, prominent names, just because they are marketable. Everyone will come in on an even playing field. I thought they were going to say no more nicknames like "He Hate Me" on the back of the jersey. Remember that? That was the first one. Maybe in a certain city, having the old college quarterback would make sense, but only if he's the best option. If it's the wrong thing. Or it's the wrong thing to do just for marketing. All right, there it is, the official statement just made about 20 minutes ago, the reformation of the XFL for a season in 2020, and with teams being announced, cities and team names being announced sometime next year in 2019. I got to tell you, I am rooting for this. I am absolutely rooting for this to work. I like seeing these upstart leagues work. I wanted the USFL to work back in the early 80s, and it did for a period of time. I was in on Doug Flutie and the New Jersey Generals and Jim Kelly and the Houston Gamblers. And Herschel Walker was also a general. Kelvin Bryant and the... Oh, damn it. I'm going to mess this one up. Philadelphia Stars? Yes. I think Philadelphia Stars. I'm trying to remember who the Pittsburgh Maulers... I'm trying to remember some of the other teams. But I was all into the USFL back in the early 1980s. I want this to work so badly. And I want it to take a great big giant bite out of the revenue of the scumbag NFL that continues to do what I described a few minutes ago. They continue to play favorites, trying to drive their political position down people's throats instead of giving them football to enjoy. I want the XFL to work. Now, obviously, they will not try to play a schedule that competes with the NFL in the fall. They will probably do what the USFL did and play in the spring. But my goodness, I think this could be something that's very, very exciting. And if I'll tell you what, Vince McMahon and his partners had the wrong idea 17 years ago because they tried to professional wrestling-ize, they tried to WWE-ize football. Didn't work. But this man is no dummy. He is a genius. He is a money-making marketing genius. There's a reason he has the billions he has. There's a reason he can just sell $150 million worth of WWE stock and say, I'm going to take that cash now. I'm going to start my own football league. That's a pretty damn big venture. It's very risky. If anybody can do this and pull it off, learning from the mistakes he made the first time around, it's a guy like Vince McMahon. And you don't have to like pro wrestling to recognize that. Just throwing it out there. Let me grab a quick one from Steven in Toledo before we get to our bottom of the hour sports center. Steven, go right ahead. You like the XFL idea or you think this is stupid?
No, I mean, I don't really care for the NFL or the XFL, but this, I mean, this certainly seems like an attempt to sort of grab the, you know, various sort of conservative groups and alt-right groups and get them a league that they can root for where there aren't, you know, pampered black athletes and whatnot,
pampered black athletes.
You've already said
too many offensive things for this call to continue. Goodbye. No thank you for the phone call. You're done. The idea that you just use the words conservative and alt-right in the same sentence as if they mean the same thing means you're an idiot. You're an absolute idiot, and don't call the show anymore. You're banned. I don't even know who you are, but I don't care. That was ridiculous. The fact that you used the words pampered black athletes, are you suggesting that Vince McMahon doesn't want black athletes in his league? Are you serious right now? Do you know how many black and Latino athletes and Asian athletes are superstars in his wrestling promotion? You're injecting race into this? That was one of the dumbest phone calls I think I've ever heard. Please don't make another one to this radio station, at least not while I am on it. In fact, not while Jim Cushion's on it either. Between 3 and 5, this is a no-go zone. You don't get to call the radio station. That was offensive on 50,000 different levels, even though you only gave you time to use two of them. That was ridiculous. I love the idea. And who it appeals to, the kind of fan that it appeals to, remains to be seen. If any fans, it might fall flat again, but I will tell you what, if anybody can make one of these things go, the marketing brilliance and genius of Vince McMahon is that guy, only because he knows how embarrassing and costly it was to fail at this venture 17 years ago. If anybody can learn from their mistakes in the business world the way Vince McMahon, or the way I think they can, it's this guy. There's just nobody else who can do it. So much more to talk about, so little time. My goodness gracious, it's a
hey,
short
Bob,
show.
And, yes. You were trying to remember some of the teams. How could you forget the first champion that played at the Silver Dome, the Michigan Panthers?
Oh, yeah, how about that? Bobby Hebert, right?
Yep.
Bobby Hebert was a quarterback. I was trying to remember them all. Michigan Panthers, Pittsburgh Maulers, Philadelphia Stars, Houston Gamblers, those come to mind. Wasn't there like a Los Angeles Express?
Yeah.
That's another one. I'll be interested to see if, what kind of mid-sized markets get teams. They said it's going to be eight cities.
That's the one thing I'm most interested in,
yeah.
too. Because you got to get the big markets, obviously, and he, of course, will.
They don't want to put, I would imagine you don't want to put one in a city that already has an NFL team. You know what I'm saying? So that would open it up to something like St. Louis, which doesn't have now that the Rams are gone. It would open up to St. Louis.
Well, see, I don't know about that, because then you wouldn't get any of the bigger markets in. Example, because L.A. has teams again.
Yeah.
So what big market?
San Diego. San Diego would be one because that's where the Chargers left, and I guarantee you there's a bunch of fans down there who are ticked off about that. That might be something that they want to do. We got to look, and right now we got to get to our Sports Center on our Wild Stats. We can't do it now, but it'll be very interesting. I don't know if they'll want to put teams in cities. I mean, do you put one in New York where they already have two teams there, the Giants and the Jets? Do you really want to do that because it's a big city? Do you want to put one in L.A. where they already have the Chargers and the Rams, and neither one, well, the Rams actually, because they had a good season, had more people.
Right.
You know, and they're going to have a brand new stadium built for themselves. Do you really want to compete out there? I don't know. Two teams in the Bay Area. They said larger markets.
To get
they didn't
some
say
big
the largest.
They're going to have markets that'll end up with an XFL and an NFL team.
Maybe you do it in like a, you know, some of the cities that have NBA teams. They're big enough for NBA teams, but not NFL teams. Maybe there'll be a San Antonio.
I was just
franchise.
Thinking that when you said that. San Antonio, Texas, and its football.
Maybe there'll
and San
be an
Antonio
Oklahoma City. Maybe there'll be an Oklahoma City. Midwest, Big 12 country.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you get some players there, Big 12 superstars who don't make the NFL. Those are things to talk about. Okay, let's get to the bottom of the hour Sports Center after we go wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Jim Tomei, among the four inductees elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame yesterday. First ballot selection for Tomei. Now that makes him and Bob Feller the only two Hall of Famers with the Cleveland Indians as their primary team. The primary team, of course, meaning the team hat that will be represented in the Hall plaque itself. Jim Tomei, first ballot Hall of Famer. Congratulations to him. And we'll talk more. Chipper Jones, by the way, Vlad Guerrero, Trevor Hoffman. We'll talk more about that as we continue with Dennis Manilow in about a half an hour. Eddie Meissonette talks NBA with us coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Fans Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. 3:40 as we roll onward, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader Dennis Manilow coming up at 4:05, 4:10-ish, to talk about some of the goings-on in Cleveland, Cavalier style. Reports are LeBron James was very unhappy that they got Isaiah Thomas instead of Paul George. Who was the other person that they said? Eric Bledsoe, I believe it was.
Yeah, Bledsoe.
Yeah, that they ended up with IT instead. And now there's word that Dan Gilbert wants to sell that team. So we'll get into that with Manilow as well as Todd Haley. And his new status as the Browns offensive coordinator. That'll be at about 4:10. But now, want to say good afternoon to our friend Eddie Meissonette, one of the best commentators, I think, going. That's why we love to have him on this program here in Toledo. He comes from L.A. He is the editor-in-chief of the Sports Fan Journal online, also a contributor to Fox Sports and more. Eddie, good to have you back here in Northwest Ohio. How the hell are you?
Man, that's the best introduction I've had in weeks. I feel honored, man. I'm doing great, my brother. Thank
you. Well, yeah, you know what? You're in it, man. You know, I believe in giving credit where it's due. I believe in merit. I believe in merit-based everything. You're a great commentator, so you get the credit, man. Okay. Oh, so many different roads to travel down. Where do I want to go with you first? You want to do a little baseball? I want to ask you about the induction results yesterday. Excuse me, the Hall of Fame announcements yesterday of the new inductees. Vlad Guerrero certainly deserves it. Jim Tomei, absolutely. Trevor Hoffman, no doubt about it. Chipper Jones, crazy high percentage. No problem there whatsoever, but that's not the controversy. None of those are controversial. The only thing that's controversial, in my opinion, is the fact that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens did not make it again. They did increase about 3% over their performances in the vote totals last year. And that bothers me because I want them to go 3% down in the other direction. I don't want them ever sniffing the Hall of Fame. I don't want them being able to buy tickets to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame because I don't believe cheaters belong there. What say you, Eddie Meissonette?
See, this is why we have a great show. This is why we would be next in line, I think, to get on First Take or Undisputed. Because more often than not, we tend to disagree on virtually almost everything. It's great. I love the fact that I think that you're seeing something very interesting in the voting process with the Hall of Fame, and that the voters are either getting older and losing their votes or putting their votes down, or you're seeing a new, a younger demo of voters come in who aren't nearly as conservative in regards to their beliefs and what's happened with Bonds and Clemens in particular, and their viewpoints on if they should get into the Hall of Fame or not. What I do find fascinating is that I feel like my prediction is we're going to get to the final year of them being on the ballot, and lo and behold, we're going to creep their way to 75%, and people are going to say that this was like almost a punishment, almost a torture to make them wait this long to get into the Hall of Fame. And the reality is the way the news cycle and the social media cycle and the way we cover sports now, I would actually make a case that they don't necessarily need the Hall of Fame. It's probably nice and it's something they dreamed about as a kid, but probably in the age and their stature and where they are now, there is a legitimate case to be made that they don't need the Hall of Fame, that everybody will recognize their greatness regardless of what happens with the ballot.
Deal. I can live with that. Good deal. I'll recognize their greatness for what it was, but they don't get the Hall of Fame. If you can sell that to them, we're done. Take their names off of it and let's just move on, because I think that's great. Eddie, why? I understand your explanation as to maybe how it's happening. Maybe some of the older voters are dropping off and the younger voters run. It's fine. By the way, I don't necessarily agree with you that they're going to get to 75% in their last year. Just based on the percentage of increase each year, now that they're in year six, they've only got four more bites. Well, 79 to 10. They've only got four more bites at the apple. 3% increase each year doesn't get them there from 56 where they are now. So tell me why you think they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, despite having cheated the game and cheated the legends that came before them out of so many of their records.
Yeah, sure. I view the Hall of Fame in a simple premise that you are the absolute best at what you do. It's the same reason I argue with my coworkers from time to time about the merit of someone like Jason Witten being in the Hall of Fame. I don't see Jason Witten being in the Hall of Fame personally, because I never viewed him as the best tight end to ever play in his generation.
You would be very
correct. Or the second or third base. And I view it in a simple term, like, regardless of when you think the allegations may have started or when steroids may have been consumed, there was a clear and definitive point of time when you could say Roger Clemens was the best pitcher in baseball, and a clear and definitive point of time when you could say Barry Bonds was the best player in baseball. That's point A. Point B, the point about managing when someone's cheating and when they're caught and when they're not caught. I mean, baseball, we love baseball in some ways because cheating is a part of the game. They did something that they got caught. Well, Barry Bonds was never officially caught, but that's neither here or there. And I'm not the moral police. And once you're punished, you know, it's kind of like our justice system. Once you're punished, you've been punished, and there's no more need to do punishment because you've got the time served.
Wait. What time served? What? How have they been punished? They haven't been punished at all. If they get into the Hall of Fame, they kept their records. Barry Bonds' name still sits atop the home run charts, which he does not deserve. He stole that spot from Hammer and Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron is still the home run king in my mind, always will be, until somebody breaks it legitimately with natural methods. Roger Clemens still has his seven Cy Youngs. Where's their punishment? Nothing that they did has been taken away from them, and if you give them the Hall of Fame, there's no punishment and there's no incentive for everybody to do it the right way.
I think we have a tendency to hold the records and the things that they did, the awards, over their head as we're going to take this away from you. It's kind of like the Heisman Trophy. And Reggie Bush is a great example. We took the Heisman away from Reggie Bush. My contention is one that Bomani Jones said, and I 100% co-sign, that Vince Young took Reggie Bush's Heisman and national championship. But I totally also recognize Reggie Bush is still the Heisman for that particular year, regardless if it was taken away or not. And I think that's similarly how I feel a lot of times about the award. So, in other words,
you agree with me there hasn't been any punishment. People still recognize their greatness, all of these things, even if they were to take the records away. You're saying people – so and they didn't take them away. You know, Reggie Bush did have his Heisman taken away. They did not have theirs taken away, so there's no punishment. You said that once punishment has been served, time served, it should be over. Where is time served here? What punishments have they received?
I think that there's, so to make my other point, I think that there are tangible and sometimes there are things that we can't measure. Look, we talk about the tarnished legacy of Pete Rose forever. We talk about the tarnished legacy of Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds forever. Like, it is the fact that they are consistently a part of the conversation and how they've been affected by Major League Baseball and their organizations as well. I think that also has a major impact on their daily life and their career and their legacy. So it might not be, I think we look for tangible punishments. Oh, we took the records. Oh, there's asterisks. Oh, we took their money and things like that. And I think more often than not, there is a lot of punishment that's served that we don't necessarily see. But we, as the media, someone who's in the media, we are a part of putting that on them because the narrative is so focused on those negatives.
I would suggest, Eddie, we're talking to Eddie Meissen at SportsFanJournal.com, Fox Sports and more. I would suggest to you that the Hall of Fame being withheld from them is the only punishment that they have faced because of everything that you just said. You know, the only thing that can be taken from them is that honor. And since they had no honor and decided to cheat, even though they were already Hall of Fame players before they started it, and they said, well, I'm not getting enough attention for it. Other guys are cheating, so I'm going to cheat too so I can get more. That's what Barry's problem was. Probably Clemens too. But that's the only thing that has been taken away from them. And if you put them in, now they have received zero punishment whatsoever for cheating the game. And as I say, cheating people like Hank Aaron out of his rightful place as the all-time home run king. And I think there has to be some punishment for that. And right now there isn't any. You put them in and it's gone.
I think we just agree to disagree. I think that, look, I'm also of the opinion that I don't care that much. Like, and that's the other part of the conversation is, like, there are people that either really care, and then there are other people that are kind of numb and also realize, like, look, man, baseball has a ton of scandal. This is the scandal that we're going to put on this plateau of moral shouting, and you can stand on this on a moral plane and judge. My personal opinion, again, is Barry Bonds brought me a lot of enjoyment as a young adult and as a baseball fan, and I think that the benefit that baseball received because of what guys like Clemens and Bonds did is something that would be a bit hypocritical to think like, oh, well, we have to chastise and we have to punish in that way. I'm just looking at it as trying to be as objective about it as possible. It's not excusing the behavior, but it's also recognizing the totality of what this person did, in my opinion, still obviously merits being included into the Hall of Fame.
Eddie Meissen at SportsFanJournal.com, Fox Sports. Let's shift to basketball. The Cavaliers are a train wreck. They have lost, what is it now? Is it 12 out of 15 or 11 out of 13, I think is the biggest number, and 6 out of 7 or something else stupid like that. Are they about to blow this thing up? Are they going to trade Kevin Love? Are they going to trade or try to trade Isaiah Thomas? Are they going to try to move Tristan Thompson? Are they going to try to move J.R. Smith? Is the team that won 3 straight Eastern Conference championships done?
That's tough. You know, I think it's been fascinating to watch what the Cleveland Cavaliers are in the year of our Lord 2018. And they are a terrible shooting club, and they are a terrible defensive unit. And the defense I could maybe see coming, but the amount of poor shooting overall, and it's actually gotten worse since Isaiah Thomas has gotten on that team, where, like, Jay Crowder can't make a shot. Kevin Love is struggling to shoot. They've said that they're putting Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup for Jay Crowder, and I actually think that makes the situation worse because now you have even more crowding internally for driving opportunities and kickouts for penetrators. So, you know, I think that they're grasping for straws. I don't necessarily think it's over. I don't necessarily think it's time to blow everything up. But I think that I've always said that I've never believed in Dan Gilbert as being the proper leader and executor of the organization, and the fact that he's willing to sell actually might signal a new beginning for Cleveland and a new organizational philosophy for Cleveland, because this is a mismatch of different stars with different beliefs. And I think that some of it does point to LeBron, because LeBron's singular focus has always been to be the GOAT, to be the greatest. And I do think that that has had an impact on the expectations of the people around him, and they haven't always been able to live up. And because of the lack of organization, it's made it sometimes very chaotic for the Cavaliers.
I think all of that is true, and I think there's a lot of blame to go around there. I think a lot of it belongs to LeBron James. I think a lot of it belongs to Dan Gilbert, especially because he fired the man who was building this thing and really who had his finger on the pulse of the team, and that would be David Griffin. That's no knock on Kobe Altman, but it's just, to me, it's not... Sure. It's not the right decision that Dan Gilbert made. I want to ask you more about that in a second, but Jim Cushman said he has a breaking basketball report. Jim,
what do you got? As if the drama surrounding Cavs stuff couldn't get any weirder. So breaking in the last hour, guys, and therefore I don't know if either of you have come across this yet. Joe Farden over at Cleveland.com, and now this is picked up among others. I just happen to be on Daniel Rapoport over at Sports Illustrated. Simply put, guys, headline, Kyrie Irving threatened to have knee surgery if the Cavs didn't trade him.
Wow.
Just breaking in the last hour, thoughts.
He wanted out badly. He bad enough to say, if you don't trade me, I'm just not going
to
play.
Yeah, more on the story is, according to the sources, this would be a follow-up minor procedure from the one he underwent after the 2015 finals, the one where he messed up his kneecap in game one. And basically, as part of his demanding a trade, he was going to say, well, then I'm going to get the surgery now and not play. Is kind of where this is going.
Pretty,
this is all just breaking
clear.
In the last hour.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that, you know, this wasn't just, you know, well, I want to take on a new challenge. At least to me, Eddie, tell me what you think. This, the thing, whatever that is, between Kyrie and LeBron was a lot deeper, a lot more personal, a lot more serious than maybe anybody wanted to believe while they played together. And even when they made the original divorce here, when this happened. But it sounds like it was far worse than that now that we know that he just wanted to get the hell away from LeBron James. And I don't know if LeBron felt mutually or not. What do you think?
I think this sounds like the type of threat like your son or daughter might make when you've given them some tough news and I'm going to run away. And then your parent says, well, go ahead, run away, see what happens. And I think that this feels like one of those types of things that was maybe pushed through by an agent on behalf of Kyrie. And I just think it really, again, to the point that you made earlier, it really speaks to the testament of the leadership and the lack thereof of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because, look, we have seen players like Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, even more recently with LaMarcus Aldridge demanding a trade. Players have demanded trades and wanted to be traded on numerous occasions. But I think the organizations that realize they have a bigger goal, a bigger opportunity in mind, have figured out a way to salvage and fix and bandage up these situations. And for whatever reason, the Cleveland Cavaliers were so fearing of anything to either disrupt LeBron or disrupt the relationship with Kyrie that they moved quickly. And I think that's part of the reason why I think LeBron James, if the reports are to be believed, that he was upset about the fact that they got Isaiah Thomas back instead of Eric Bledsoe or Paul George, is like, man, look, if LeBron's to be trusted, and I don't have any reason not to, I didn't want y'all to trade Kyrie, but if you're going to trade Kyrie, you're going to give me the worst defender in the NBA instead of a guy like Paul George or potentially Eric Bledsoe, who we know is in his camp. So I just feel like this could have been salvaged, and this seems like the type of thing that probably is leaked because it's something that just points to the fact that, hey, like, this is already chaotic in Cleveland, and this is just gasoline on the fire.
If you are a Kyrie Irving and you're in Boston right now, and they've hit a little bit of a skid themselves, nothing anywhere near the magnitude of Cleveland's, but if you're Kyrie Irving, you've had the kind of season you've had, you're going to be an all-star starter, you're first seed in the East, about five games ahead of last year's pace in which the Celtics ended up first in the East, and you're watching what's happening in Cleveland as the dumpster fire kind of starts to be lit. What are you feeling right now, Eddie Meissonette, if you're Kyrie? Are you feeling satisfaction? Are you feeling pity for your old teammates? Are you feeling a little bit of pride because they've never ever had a skid like this? Even though they've had their January doldrums in these recent championship years, they've never had a skid like this with Kyrie Irving on the team. There's never been this much chaos offensively and defensively, even though Kyrie was never considered a great defensive player. How are you feeling right now as you watch this from Boston?
Oh, I think Kung Fu Kyrie feels great. I mean, the epic philosopher that is Kyrie, Andrew Irving, is feeling like he prophesied this from his time crafting his skills as Uncle Drew on the playground as an old man back in the day, and now everything is coming to fruition. How much of that is actually on him versus his organization and the luck that has? Look, man, there's a scenario where Kyrie Irving is playing in Phoenix this season instead of Boston, and I don't know if we're having nearly as much of the same conversation about what Kyrie could or couldn't be doing. But Kyrie's got to feel great about it. And what's fascinating to me is, and this is my true belief, is that Boston is going to probably end up as the one seed, and Cleveland's probably going to limp their way into the conference finals. And I think that we're going to have an epic showdown of a conference finals. And I think it's totally within the realm of possibility that LeBron James and whatever cast of characters that he pulls from the YMCA in Northeast Ohio to suit up, they could still actually beat the Boston Celtics in the conference finals. And it might not happen, but regardless of what happens, I think that this is the end of Cleveland with under the ownership regime, and it's time for it to, I think, to blow up. If LeBron stays, it'll be interesting. If he doesn't, it'll be interesting. But I think Kyrie has his new path, and I think he feels 100% great about it.
Just a yes or no on this one. Will LeBron James be a Cavalier next season? Yes or no?
No.
Okay, I kind of agree with that. Real quick on All-Stars, Jim Cushling, go.
Any thoughts on the All-Star reserves that got announced the other day? I kind of think to a certain degree, the other team we cover around here, the Pistons, I think Andre Drummond, a bit of a snub. Give me your thoughts. Did they get it right for the reserves?
I think Drummond's interesting. I think I would have liked to have seen the Pistons float a bit more towards 500 or so, with Reggie Jackson being away, and the fact that they've cratered so much as they have in Jackson's absence, I think it speaks to the value of what Drummond is to that team. It's not to question how good he is and how great of a player he is, but I just would have liked to see, and I think that some voters held that against them in how the Pistons are comparatively to the East. I think the Paul George argument is fascinating. I think you could legitimately make the case he's been one of the two, three best defensive wing players in the league, shooting a great percentage from three and steals as well. And I think he's also being punished because Oklahoma City has such high expectations, and through the first 15, 20 games, they look like crap. Meanwhile, they're 19-8 in their last 27, and they look really good. But I think it was a case of maybe a little too late for Paul George. So I think those arguments are interesting. I think John Wall probably could have been left off. I would have been okay with that. I don't necessarily know who you put in for him. I thought Kristaps actually was probably a fringe candidate as well. Would have been nice to see Miami get a star in there. And I know you only asked me for a yes or no, but my belief as of right now in January of 2018 is I think LeBron James takes his talent back to the Miami Heat this coming offseason, because he wants to go to a great organization, and I think the best organization he ever experienced was down in South Beach.
This is very hard for me to do for you because you're a verbose individual, as am I, but I need three words is all I need in response to two questions. Number one, who is the greatest football player of all time, in Eddie Meissonette's opinion? Two names, two words.
Jim Brown.
If Tom Brady wins his sixth on Sunday, next Sunday, sixth in eight Super Bowls. Nearest guy to that is John Elway, who played in five, and he went 2-3. If John Elway goes 6-2, if Tom Brady goes 6-2 as quarterback at the hardest position in all of team sports, does he elevate to the greatest football player of all time? Yes or no?
100%, absolutely not. Never better than Jim Brown.
We will discuss that at another date. Eddie Meissonette, follow him and his work on Sports Fan Journal Online. Follow him also at Fox Sports. Eddie, thanks so much for the time. It's always a pleasure. I'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, you boys be great. Take care.
Thank you, man. Good stuff. All right, let's get out now because we've got Dennis Manilow waiting on the other side. So much more news to discuss. XFL back in 2020. We'll get into that. The Hall of Fame, the Cavaliers mess. Is Dan Gilbert selling that team? And much more coming up on The Ticket.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are going nowhere, and the only real path forward with any sense of light, the only real path forward with any sense of the future, is to trade LeBron James.
LeBron James has not made a decision what he's going to do next season as of yet, and I've never known him to be such a prisoner of the moment where he would choose something as drastic as that. He has a no-trade clause for a reason, so he's not traded.
He felt like the Cavs could have gotten Paul George and Eric Bledsoe, and they didn't get him. I'm just telling you, LeBron is there, and he's like, we could have had Eric Bledsoe and Paul George, and instead we have a draft pick who I'm never going to meet, and we have Isaiah Thomas, who is very clearly hampered, and we have Jay Crowder, who's having the worst year of his career.
Well, let's see what happens here. Way, way up. Good night from Cleveland. Tome beats the Blue Jays with a 13th inning home run.
There's a drive. Deep to right. It is long gone. Cleveland wins the game on the home run by Jim Tomey.
The 2-0.
A long drive to right and tell it goodbye.
To deep center field where it's 4-0-5 and gone.
This is what they do best.
Tomey drills one high and deep to center. Away, way, way back. Gone deep into the picnic plaza, and that might have even got out of the ballpark. Jim Tomey has just left Jacobs Field onto Eagle Avenue.
This ball is well hit to right center field. On the run is Bernie Williams. He's a spectator, though. This one's gone. And a drive to right. This could be a grand slam. It is, and the Indians are right back in it. Tomey takes Cole into the upper deck.
Tomey hits a drive to deep right center. Away back. Gone. Jim Tomey almost hit it beyond the lower deck in right center. His third homer in the series. He delivers. Tomey hits a drive to deep center. This ball is going. It is gone. Tomey, two homers tonight. Four RBIs. He hit it to dead center. Swung at and drilled. Deep right center. Away back. Gone for Tomey. Number 52. Halfway up the seats in right center.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Too much news and far too little time. Thanks for joining us as we get into hour number two of the Extravaganza, 12 minutes after 4 o'clock. Thanks to Eddie Mycenet, Fox Sports, and Sports Fan Journal Online for good conversation last half hour. Let's go out to Cleveland, which will be represented on a cap, on a Hall of Fame plaque, for the second time for a first ballot inductee. Bob Feller and now James Tomey will be representing the Indians on their caps as first-time ballot inductees, and Dennis Mantiloff covers the Indians and all things Cleveland sports, joins us here on Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Dennis, how are you, my man?
What's up, Bob? Thanks for having me on, bud.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Dennis, let's just hit the Hall of Fame real quick before I get into some of the other news with the Cavaliers. All kinds of rumors about the team being sold, trades being made, lineups being shuffled. LeBron James being upset and all the rest. We'll get into all of that. But the four newest members, Jim Tomey, first ballot, Chipper Jones, first ballot, along with Vlad Guerrero and Trevor Hoffman. Any problems with who made it and any problems with who did not?
No, I voted for all four. I have a vote, BBWAA votes, and I voted for 9. Max Allowable was 10. 4 of the 9 were the 4 who got in. I thought they all deserved it. Obviously, I wouldn't have put them in, but I certainly had Chipper Jones as a slam dunk, Jim Tomey as a slam dunk, Vlad Guerrero as a slam dunk, and I came around to Trevor Hoffman. It took me a couple years to come around to him, but they're all deserving, and hats off to them.
What 5 did you vote for that did not make it?
Schilling, Edgar Martinez, Larry Walker, Mike Mussina, and one other one I can't remember, and he got pretty, I thought he got a high, Omar.
Omar got 37%, so he will, of course, be on it again next year. What do you think the chances are of Omar getting in? We knew we wouldn't get in on the first ballot, clearly, but what do you think in 15 years? Is this something that will eventually happen? 37% is not a bad debut number.
No, it's not. It's difficult to tell. Obviously, the traffic on the ballot in coming years, you're not sure exactly how strong each of the coming fields is going to be. I didn't know, honestly, how Tomey would be received nationally, and I was really happy to see that he got 89.8% of the vote. He didn't just, skimp in at 75. He got 89.8. So people nationally viewed Tomey as valuable as we here in Cleveland did. With Vizquel, I don't know if 37% means, that's lukewarm and no one's ever going to warm to him, or is he going to gain traction as the years go? And if he does gain traction as the years go, why would he? Why would people come to appreciate Vizquel more now, 5 years from now than they do now? I'm not sure the answer to that question.
Could it be because of the incredible talent that was in these classes, or that where they were up to be in these classes? I just wonder, once the shoe-ins, the obvious Chippers and Tomes and other people like that get in, you know, maybe 5 years from now, the classes are a little bit, you know, the names on the ballot start to be a little bit less locks, and then the writers start to say, okay, let's look at what's here, and maybe Omar starts to shine when compared to guys 5 years from now.
He might. You know, I always looked at Omar as the American League's Ozzie Smith, the 20th first century stat guys say no. You know, he's not comparable to Ozzie Smith, but I disagree. So that's where we run into a stumbling block. But listen, Bob, I might be jumping the shark on you here. I apologize, but I want to get this off my chest. I'm so tired of hearing about Bonds and Clemens. You know, it's revolting to me when I hear after this vote, some of my colleagues, and I hate media on media crime, but some of my colleagues saying they're softening their stance on Clemens and Bonds. It's ludicrous to me. Cheating then is cheating now. I've never understood how cheating can get better over time, and especially when these same guys were railing against the steroid era, horrible, horrible, horrible steroid era, which it was, but now all of a sudden they're willing to treat the steroid era with kid gloves. And all Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens need to get their just desserts because they were two of the best to ever play the game. That is a bunch of malarkey, okay? That is hogwash. That argument does not fly. And you know me, Bob. I've been on here before where I said, if you're taking an exam and it's a proctored exam and you ace the 99 questions and you're caught cheating on the 100th, you don't get a 99% on that test. You get a failure, all right? So this idea that Clemens and Bonds were Hall of Famers before they started the alleged juicing is a bunch of crap because you cheated. I don't care when in your career you cheated. You cheated. You brought shame to the game. And there is a clause in our voting instructions that talks about conduct clause and integrity of the game clause. And you can't tell me that those two guys didn't mess with the integrity of the game and mess with proper conduct of a major league ball player. So this sympathy that's going on for Clemens and Bonds is revolting to me.
Dennis, I could not have said that better. About 8 years ago, you and I were sitting in a booth, and that's the first time I heard you use that test metaphor. And I have used it in various forms since, and I think I've improved upon it, and here's why. You know, your example is 99, and then he cheats on 100th question. It wasn't just the last thing that they did. It was about two-thirds of the way through what ended up being their careers. Barry Bonds started juicing around 2001, and he played until 2007. That's a significant number of years that he played baseball while using steroids. It's significant. And so to me, my metaphor, borrowing from your academic idea, Dennis, is a med student who gets, you know, two-thirds of the way through their last year of medical school, and they are cruising. They're acing every exam. They are just a wunderkind, just a prodigy. And they decide, I want to set the record for the highest grades ever. I want to be the valedictorian of my med school class. I don't even know if they have such a thing, but... So they cheat their way through the last third of their medical school year. Do they say, you know what, you are already a doctor. You were already on your way to being a doctor before you started cheating. You were killing it. You were acing everything. So we'll just skip the last third of your year that you cheated? Or are they going to say you cheated for an entire third of your medical school studies? You are expelled from this school. You will never be called doctor, because I think it would be that. And like I said, I'm just building on your academic idea, because it was a lot bigger than just cheating on the last question of a test, if that makes sense.
Well, I like your analogy too. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me that, in my opinion, writers who should know better are sitting here wondering if Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are going to get in. And I'm going to ask you this too. If steroids are so good now, if it's okay to have used them, why was it so hush-hush at the time? Why is the steroid era, why was it so secretive during the steroid era? You couldn't talk about it. Nobody wanted to be seen with pill bottles or needles or anything. If it's so acceptable, why wasn't it all over the locker room, all over the clubhouse? Why didn't we see needles and stuff when we walked in there? No, because they knew that they were cheating. These guys knew. And another thing, everybody was doing it. That's a bunch of malarkey. You're going to tell me Jim Tomey's doing it? No, he wasn't. How about Kenny Lofton? He's clean as a whistle, which brings me to another point. I'm glad Tomey got in. Okay, that's good. But a guy like Kenny Lofton, when these writers are so worried about Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds not getting in, how about you think about Kenny Lofton for a second? A clean player who wasn't a power hitter, who played the game the right way, who was a fringe Hall of Famer with his numbers. But guess what? He was on the ballot for 1 year and got bounced. One of the reasons he's underappreciated is because he was playing alongside a bunch of chemistry lab creatures. So when I don't have sympathy for Bonds and Clemens, when I don't vote for those two guys, Kenny Lofton's one of the first guys I think of, because he got screwed ultimately, perception-wise and recognition-wise, because his numbers were devalued because he was playing with a bunch of cheats. But somehow these people who support Clemens and Bonds don't seem to remember those guys.
I totally agree, Dennis. I could not say that any better either. And I'll say one other thing. In addition to guys like Lofton who got screwed by the cheaters, I will always be angry about legends whose records have been devalued by the cheaters. The fact that Hammer and Hank Aaron yes. won't be the first name on somebody's tongue 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 years from now as the all-time home run king is a crime. It's a travesty. Everyone should remember Hank Aaron is the all-time home run king, and Barry Bonds stole that from him for that reason alone. He should never be rewarded with the honor of the Hall of Fame. So
that's a great call, and I'll finish up by saying, too, that if you don't punish these guys now, if you don't punish them at the doorstep of the Hall of Fame, when will they have been punished their
never.
Entire careers? Where was the retribution for what you did to the game and how you sullied the game? It would never happen. This is the last possible chance you have to punish the cheaters, the steps of the Hall of Fame, because they played their full careers, they made their gazillion dollars, they didn't get suspended, and all this other stuff. The one place you can hold them accountable is the Hall of Fame. And if you let that go, then they got away scot-free as two of the arguably the faces of the steroid era. They would have gotten away with everything, with no penalty whatsoever.
I talked to a guest last half hour who said that their punishment has already been served. And I said, what punishment have they gotten?
What
they didn't
punishment?
Have to give up their records. They, you know, their names are still, you know, Roger Clemens didn't have to give back any of his seven Cy Youngs. None of these things. What punishment? And he said, the fact that they've had to wait before they go in is their punishment.
Oh,
I know.
I mean, I didn't hear your last guess.
No, I know.
Obviously couldn't disagree more.
No.
You know, that's tough and too bad. And here's the thing. You knew when you went down that road that this could have been one of the consequences. It's not like they're getting sideswiped here. Like, oh, we had no idea that the Hall of Fame voters might, cringe at the idea that we were, you know, chemistry lab creations. No, you knew all along. That's the risk you took.
Well, yeah, they wanted to be honored. That's why Bonds in particular, you know, we know it from Game of Shadows. He saw Sosa and McGuire getting more credit for than he was even getting, even though he was a far superior player. But because of their home run totals, he knew they cheated. So he said, I'm going to do this too. He wanted to be honored. Well, he got his short-term honoring at the expense of his long-term legacy. And that is how it ought to be made.
And I'm reading now. Oh, Barry Bonds is... He really wants to get into the Hall of Fame. Ah, stop it. Yeah, that guy's a sympathetic figure. Bull dust.
All right, so quickly, let's move to the Cavaliers. No, let's move to the Browns just for a second. Are you excited about the formation of the XFL, which is going to be reinvigorated and starting over in 2020? Finally, a league in which the Browns might be able to be competitive. What do you think? Cleveland Browns and the XFL.
I thought you were going to say otherwise known as the Browns farm team. But, yeah, the XFL, good for McMahon, if he figured it out after the first go-around didn't work out so well. I still remember Tommy Maddox throwing around that black and red ball. That was a lot of fun. But,
I loved it. And I think hope this works. And they're going to change it. It's going to be family-friendly. They're not going to do any of that, you know, WWE-type stuff with it this time. It's going to be a serious attempt. Real question on the Browns, though, even though I'm only half-joking that I think if they would have played in the XFL, they might have finished third in their division the way they played the last 2 years. But having said that, Todd Haley is the new offensive coordinator. According to a conversation I heard with Pittsburgh Radio, they could not be happier. They could not be happier that Todd Haley is gone, and they could not be happier that he is coaching a team or going to be offense coordinating for a team in the division. He was not liked. He was not respected. Even though their teams put up big numbers with the tremendous skill players in Pittsburgh, they're happy he's gone. How happy are you that he's going to be calling plays for Hugh Jackson?
Hey, I'm not sure. It's a fascinating dynamic because Jackson's going to be on the hot seat, presumably, and you never know with the Haslams, but Jackson's presumably on the hot seat as the season opens. To his left, he's got a former NFL head coach in Todd Haley. To his right, he has a former head coach, NFL head coach in Greg Williams. So it's an interesting thing, and three ginormous egos. But I'll say this, above all else, I get that Haley, you know, he'd still be with the Steelers if he got along with people and they liked him. But clearly, Hugh Jackson needed an offensive play caller. He needed an offensive coordinator because he was drowning in the responsibilities that come with being a head coach, on top of the fact that he was responsible for the game plan, calling the plays and all that comes with it. The only chance, I believe, for Hugh Jackson to survive year three is to have had an offensive coordinator. So no matter who it was, somebody had to come in there. And Haley's at least got a resume, so I'm willing to give him a chance.
Dennis, let's move to the Cavaliers. Couple of really unique stories today. Number one, word is, according to multiple sources, Dan Gilbert wants to sell the team. Clearly, he would like to re-sign LeBron James before he does it. Otherwise, the team loses, I don't know, how many tens of millions of dollars in value, or maybe, you know, maybe $100 million. Who knows? I mean, the Clippers sold for, what, $2 billion or something stupid like that? You know, the Cavaliers with LeBron James would be very valuable without him, certainly less. That's number one. Number two, word is LeBron James was furious that he didn't get Paul George or Eric Bledsoe and was stuck with Isaiah Thomas in the trade that cost them Kyrie Irving, which, as we have seen, is costing them very, very big right now. They would not be in this position probably with Irving still on the team and being the player he is. Number three, Kyrie Irving, according to sources in your media outlet on Cleveland.com, Joe Varden says he threatened to sit out with knee surgery, which would have been a follow-up procedure if the Cavs didn't trade him. And if they traded him, he was going to forgo that surgery, which, of course, ended up happening. You can go ahead and respond to any or all of that, Dennis.
Yeah. Take them one at a time. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Gilbert's trying to unload because he knows the value of the franchise will drop precipitously when LeBron leaves. As to what percentage drop, we don't know, but it will be significant. Not to say that even with that drop, Gilbert's not going to make some cash, because he will. The question is, though, how much? And so, yes, LeBron is tied to the value of the franchise. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Gilbert's trying to unload it. Of course, he's going to deny it. Okay, number two was the LeBron being
LeBron
upset
wanted
about
Paul George or Eric Bledsoe and not Isaiah Thomas.
Absolutely, don't blame him one bit. In my opinion, the beginning of the end of the Cavaliers was when Dan Gilbert refused to pay David Griffin what David Griffin felt he deserved as a top-flight general manager in the league. When Griffin walked, when they parted company, then that's when the Paul George trade, in my mind, unraveled. Now, some people will say that the Pacers were backing out of it before Griffin was gone and all that stuff. I don't believe it. I think that if Gilbert or if Griffin was still here, Paul George would be a member of the Cavaliers. I don't know for sure about Bledsoe, but I'm virtually guaranteeing that Paul George would be. And the other day, you see Paul George running with, you know, Anthony and Westbrook, and they're torching the Cavs, and George is having the time of his life. And LeBron's sitting there going, why couldn't this be my teammate? So I don't blame him. And he also looks at the fact that, all right, you offloaded Kyrie. Maybe you had to do that. Why did you have to do it to the Celtics? Why did you have to get this return that includes a 5'9" guy with a hip problem? So I don't blame LeBron for having angst whatsoever. Part three, the Kyrie potential sit out with a knee surgery. I'm sure he'll deny it. It wouldn't surprise me if that was potentially a fear that the Cavs had, but I still would not have traded him to the Celtics, and certainly not for what the Cavs got back.
I don't disagree with that at all. And now they have to make all kinds of changes, and they had to make all kinds of moves. Number one, it looks like Tristan Thompson's going to start instead of Jay Crowder. That's the big lineup change that Ty Lue has finally come up with. Why is J.R. Smith still in the rotation, let alone in the starting lineup? Number two, when it comes to changing the roster, word is they're trying to work a deal for George Hill. They're trying to give up only Channing Frye and Shumpert, which Sacramento is not going to deal with. They want more than that. What do you think will happen with respect to a roster shakeup? Would they consider moving something bigger, like Kevin Love?
I think that Love would be in play. Yeah. And I mean, I know that, you know, some might say, well, it's fashionable to say Love's in play because his teammates were on his case the other day about, you know, not being available in that game or being dizzy and leaving. But I'm not saying it because of that. I'm saying that Love could be dangled as a chip if they really want to change the complexion of this roster. I would start at the point guard position. I would do what it took to get George Hill, and not overpay. And I get where, you know, Sacramento's trying to dig in here and see if they can squeeze the Cavs. You don't overpay for George Hill, but you try to acquire him so he can restore order to the point guard position. I think George Hill, with Jose Calderon backing him up, is a solid 1-2 point guard punch that knows how to play the game. Incredibly high basketball IQ. This offense was running pretty smoothly when Calderon was in charge. I'm not saying he's a 40-minute guy, but I want to see George Hill and Calderon at the point, which means I want IT the heck out of here, okay? He is not the same player he was in Boston, and even if he was, I still don't want him because he can't play defense. He can't get his shot off against good defensive teams. He dominates the ball too much when you've already got LeBron. And he also reportedly, potentially, could be one of those leakers or malcontents or whatnot trying to stir the pot. So get IT out of here. Forget about trying to win the Celtics trade because you never will. Get rid of him, and there's your point guard set up. And then from there, I'm looking to make another deal, potentially involving Jordan, potentially involving Lou Williams. But they need to shake this roster up. If they don't do anything, they are not only going to not win a title, they're not getting out of the East. They're going to be an early exit in the playoffs.
Dennis Manilov laying it all out. D-Man, great stuff. I wish I had more time. Next time around, we'll catch up on more of those stories, and we'll talk a little bit more about LeBron James' future if they don't do some of the things you're talking about, meaning where his future will take place. D-Man, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Dennis Manilov, Cleveland.com, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. All right, we've got to get our bottom of the hour local sports center. Then we talk UT Rockets basketball. Head coach Todd Kowalczyk will be joining us to talk about the Red Hot Rockets, one undefeated with two more wins last week, and they continue to be first place in the MAC West. Before we get there, though, it is time for our ticket sweet deal of the week. Where's the music for that? How about a $50 gift card to Sidelines Sports Eatery and Pub? Three area locations in Toledo, Maumee, and Lambertville. All you've got to do tomorrow morning is log on to 1065theticket.com at about 9 a.m., and you'll get a $50 gift certificate to Sidelines for just $35. How about that? That's an outstanding deal. All you got to do is go to the website while supplies last, or I'll give you a $50 gift certificate to Sidelines at any one of the locations for free right now. Caller 7. Call 866-240-1065. 866-240-65. Caller number 7, that $50 gift card is yours. Good luck. Talking Rockets basketball when we come right back on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling right along. What an absolutely packed show that we have had today. I told you we had a ton of stuff, and we had a ton of good guests, and I always feel like I'm giving them all short shrift because we just can't spend enough time talking about the Hall of Fame, talking about the new baseball news, talking about the NBA. Now, we got to spend some time talking about the red hot, and I mean red hot, Toledo Rockets. 6 wins in a row for the Rockets, including now bring out the brooms, a season sweep over Western Michigan after taking down Western on Tuesday evening. This after Saturday's win over Kent State, so another 2 in a week. And they got a couple of big ones coming up, the Battle of I-75, basketball style with Bowling Green on Saturday. And then Ball State, one of 3 teams chasing the Rockets in the MAC West, all of them down by 3 games in the loss column, however. And joining us now to talk about the Red Hot Rockets is Coach Todd Kowalczyk, who's making it all happen. Hey, Coach, how are you?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Not as good as you. I think that's fair to say. Would you agree?
I don't know about that. I'm sure you're had some ups and downs, you know, in your profession as well. But right now, obviously, we're playing well. And I want to make sure our guys continue just to understand why we're playing good. And, they certainly, they're a humble group. But at the same time, I want them to have some arrogance about them, too, which I think, you know, sometimes in athletics can be good if it's done the right way.
That's a very interesting way to say that. You want them to understand what they're doing well and why they're doing it well. Remain humble, but show some arrogance. How do you teach that? Or is that something that's just kind of intrinsic to, you know, to players just based on their own personality?
Well, it's certainly a fine line with all of that. But this has been a very, you know, close group and a together group. And I think they understand that. That's why we've, you know, been having some success. But I also, you know, think that they're a team that just loves to compete, you know, and I see it in practice. Even when we do just simple shooting drills, it's fun to watch them compete in those drills.
Coach, while you want them to have some arrogance, I get that, you don't want them to get too full of themselves. Is it hard to push that if they happen to glance at the standings? You know, I mean, certainly you say, well, there's a lot of basketball left, and there is. But, wow, the second-place teams in the MAC West all have 4 losses, 3 of them. The other 2 teams have 5, and you're sitting there at 6-1. That's a pretty healthy cushion, and you don't want guys to think that they have a healthy cushion, right?
No, you don't. And I'm not, you know, I guess it's one of my pet peeves with you know, the generation that we're coaching now. I'm not sure that they even look at the standing, to be perfectly honest with you. I think they probably know it because – you know, people in the media say things to them, but our guys, they you know, if we get to the hotel and, you know, you got Akron Kent on TV, they'd just as soon watch the Cavs play a bad Sacramento King team. You know, they watch the NBA stuff more. It kind of drives me nuts a little bit, but I think it's not just our players. I think it's everywhere.
Yeah, and maybe that is the case. I just think of the standings, though, because obviously, you know, you want to be in the best position possible when the end of the season comes for seeding in the in the MAC tournament, and so maybe they'll start looking at that, I guess, a little bit closer to, you know, March or mid-March before, mid-February and approaching March before they maybe start looking at it for those reasons.
Well, I think more importantly than that is they want to compete. They want to win the regular season championship. I think that is a lot more value to them than any type of seeding type situation. They know that we're in the hunt to win a championship. Now we got to, you know, and we've talked, you know, my college coach taught me a long time ago, and I've shared it with our players. You know, maybe I mentioned on the show as well, but, you know, you can't win a championship in January. You can't do it. But you sure as heck can lose one, you know, and I think our guys are in a good position now to just keep understanding that we got to get better at some things. And that's the beauty of this team right now. It's not like we're playing great basketball. We're playing well, you know, but there's some, we haven't been all on the same page, you know, for 40 minutes. We haven't played the perfect game or had everybody making shots at the same night. Like, you know, Nate Navigato was 1 of 8. He's the best 3-point shooter in the Mid-American Conference. Was 1 of 8, and all 7 misses were great looks. He makes two of those, we win by eight going away or nine going away.
You know, you may have just answered my question, because I was going to ask you a little bit about the win over Western. Again, the second on the season, so you sweep that. You've kind of got us trained to not look at point totals, but shooting percentages, and to show really how well your defense has played. I look at 46% for the Rockets from the floor and 37% from Western, and I think to myself, you probably did win by 8 or 9 or something and going away, and instead it was a four-point game, 85-81. To what do you attribute that?
Fouls. You know, they get to the foul line a ton. Thomas Wilder get to the foul line a bunch. I think they only had, what, six turnovers on the stat sheet. We had nine, which I think is nine's a very good number for us. But give Thomas Wilder credit. And I thought the referees did a really good job. I mean, there was a lot of fouls called, but they called it the way they're supposed to. And, when you create contact, there's going to be fouls.
Yeah, Wilder had 17 of their 34, so half of their free throws were from Thomas Wilder on his way to his 40 points. Just to throw it out there, though, you guys shot 32 of them. They shot a little bit better at 79% from the line, 75% for you guys. So turnovers, I think you said six, it was four. I've got it in front of me. I know you don't. You turned it over nine, which is a good night. They only turned it over four times, so they really took good care of the basketball, and that probably contributed a lot to it. So, really, really, really good win and a tough win to get to. Let's look forward now, Coach, as we always like to do. And it's a little more fun this time looking at Saturday's game, because it is the traditional battle of I-75. And I think Jim Cushlin wants to ask you a question about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, before we get into the nitty-gritty on this one, Coach, a game where both teams overall having good seasons. The Falcons are playing much better overall. But I asked this question to your counterpart, Michael Huger, down there at Bowling Green. We talked with him the other day here on the program. I'll ask you, it's the only time I see Toledo v. Bowling Green on the schedule. I'm not a fan of that. Your thoughts on only getting to play this game once this season instead of twice like it should be?
Yeah, David Briggs asked me the same question today. I couldn't agree more with you, Jim. I'd like to see that played twice, I think, for a lot of reasons. We only do that once every 3 years, because you only play two teams from the East twice. That should be maybe an exception. We should probably have Bowling Green every year. I don't know if they would do that. I know we've talked about it, but I don't think this is ever going to happen. Unless we go to 22 conference games, and that really hasn't been discussed either. But, it makes sense for Northwest Ohio. It makes sense for the Mid-American Conference. I mean, I think it makes them look good when you have great crowds and you have, a great rivalries. I mean, I think our rivalry is the best, and maybe the longest standing in the conference. I know Kent and Akron have a good one as well. And it also helps our budgets too. Let's face it, it's a very short travel, which helps that. But you're talking about attendance. Hopefully we'll sell out Saturday night. That's 7,300 people are going to be at the game. That's also revenue.
Coach, I'm a relatively educated guy, and I say smart things sometimes. I also say some really stupid things sometimes. I'm like a three-point shooter. Sometimes I'm hitting and sometimes I'm not. This one might be one of the stupid ones. But just on this line of thinking where you guys are talking about, I totally agree you should play them twice. And if they won't go to 22 conference games to make that happen, is it possible to just schedule them as a non-conference game? The two of you guys getting together and saying, we're going to play each other twice. One will be in the conference, but we're going to play early in the season because we should. Has that ever been done?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know, Bob, it's ever been done. I don't know if it's legal, and I'm not sure that our league would allow it. But that's a great question.
I don't know. So I don't know if that was a make
You know what? Let me do some homework, and then next week let's revisit that.
That's a good idea. I don't know if it's legal either. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be, for crying out loud. I mean, the conference schedule comes out, and they got you guys once, and you guys schedule your non-conference schedule at your whim, and so do they. And what the hell? Just something to think about. What about on the court now? Let's talk about the actual matchup. Jimmy pointed out they're having a decent season as well. BG is 12-8. They're sitting, I want to say, fourth in the East of the MAC right now at 3-4. Tell me about the matchup.
They're 6-3 on the road. They're a tremendous road team, talented team. Wiggins, their starting center, obviously a local kid, is having a great year. He's one of the best post players in our league. Fry, their shooting guard, is you know, I think one of the better, you know, sophomores in our conference, can really shoot it. And Justin Turner is a freshman, redshirt freshman, is our leading scorer. They're a talented team. They really push it in transition. They're well coached. They're really going to defend. You know, I think Michael Huger's doing a very good job with this team.
I know the fans certainly get excited for this, and as you say, if we get a sellout, that's a great thing. On Saturday, you certainly want that to be the case. And I'm curious, do the players get as geeked up for the I-75 thing, for the local, or the, excuse me, the geographical locality of this thing, the rivalry of I-75, the way they do on the football field?
I think so. I mean, I've said this before many times since coming to Toledo. This game means more than any other game. I'm not a you know, the typical cliche coach that says it's just the next game. No, it's not. It's Bowling Green. It means more to the community. It means more to the institutions. It means more to our students and our players. You know, it's a big basketball game, and we treat it as such.
That's a good answer. I was hoping to hear that. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. It's kind of like the Michigan-Ohio State Big Ten thing. In football, it's one thing. In basketball, it's something a little bit different. And I'm glad to hear that it's something that really does bring out the best in your players, and they really do see it as a different game. This is a rivalry that is very important for them to win. Bragging rights for an entire season, unless you happen to meet in the MAC tournament, are on the line when you only play once. So that's a great thing. Coach, I won't ask you about Ball State because you're looking at the next game, but I have tickets to give away to Ball State, the game against Ball State, for this coming Tuesday, and I want you to help us out, if you would. Give us your favorite number today.
One.
Number one, first caller, dial fast. How about that? Fast fingers. Coach Kowalczyk has laid it down, 866-240-1065. Caller number one gets a pair of tickets to the Rockets game against Ball State on Tuesday. And, Kush, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's the club seats, right, with the parking pass?
We do. We'll go give these ones away because I have two different pairs. Nice. One of them is club seats with parking pass. Well,
Let's do that right now. Coach has laid it out. Hey, Coach, 6 in a row and 9 out of 10. I say that not to jinx. I say that to congratulate and to wish you the best in keeping that alive in the Battle of I-75 on Saturday, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, Coach. Coach Todd Kowalczyk, Toledo Rockets. Basketball is just on fire. I mean, there's no other way to say it. 9 out of 10, as I said, 6 in a row and 9 out of 10. Their last loss was to Buffalo, and that was way back on, oh, for crying out loud, that was on January 2nd. We had just flipped the calendar. They have not lost since January 2nd, and now it is, of course, January 25th. So clearly the Rockets are on a roll. And, yeah, I didn't mean to do rock and roll, but it's just the way that it is. Just to throw it out there, too, and as I mentioned to Coach Kowalczyk, you know, you don't want to say, hey, we're sitting pretty with a big cushion with a three-game lead in our division of the conference when there's a lot of basketball to be played. But it is a big cushion, and there is a lot of basketball to be played. After BG and Ball State, just to throw it out there, Akron is waiting, and they are not having the best season at 3-4, so that's an opportunity, 3-4 in their half of the conference. Then you got, hold on a second here, let me find the rest of the way. Northern Illinois, which is one of the three teams that are three games behind them in the MAC West, would be the next home game after that. Then they would be at Miami of Ohio, and Miami is about a 500 team, 11-9 overall, 4-3. My point is, I think if they can take care of business here against Bowling Green, this winning streak could last for a while. And it wouldn't be until February 13th, beg your pardon, that's when they get Ohio, who is in last place, and they are just 2-5 in the MAC thus far. So there's another great opportunity. Ball State again at Ball State on February 17. Eastern and Central, as they do a little bit of the directional thing. Eastern is dead last in the MAC West. Central is tied with them, both of them 2-5. Then Northern Illinois again, and then Eastern again. I got to tell you, I'm just looking at it, laying it out there. They won't get a chance to avenge the loss to Buffalo, obviously, but they ought to be. I'm not a Vegas guy, and I don't know how much Vegas puts on MAC when they put lines on MAC games, but I'm just saying they ought to be favored probably almost the rest of the doggone way out, almost on the rest of the way out, with the exception potentially of a couple of road games simply because of the fact that they would be on the road.
No, and I would agree with that. And the more impressive part is, you know, the one loss, as you mentioned, Bob, is to Buffalo. And I think, you know, right now, until we get farther along and closer to the conference tournament, because they were one of the favorites coming in, Buffalo was.
Sure.
So I'll keep giving them the top spot. But then the Rockets, as mentioned, have won all the rest in the conference so far. And this is a key for down the line. I don't think it's going to help in any kind of at-large situation because the MAC is the MAC.
Yep.
But Toledo's RPI is now up to 68, which is pretty doggone good for a MAC score.
Yeah, that is. That
Buffalo's,
absolutely is.
For perspective, Buffalo is at 27. No other MAC team is under 100.
Wow. That is very impressive, no doubt. And I'm sure they wish they had another crack at Buffalo, and maybe they'll get that in the MAC tournament. But
More importantly is also the seeding. Bowling Green especially, more than the Rockets, but both have had to deal with this. You know, in the MAC tournament, only the top four go straight to Cleveland. The other eight have to play that home road first round before they get to the queue. Both teams right now are in line, or at least Bowling Green's fighting for it. But they're in line, especially Toledo, to at least get the bye and start in Cleveland, which always, I think, helps.
That's a great point, Kush. You're first, I think, right? That's going to do it for... oh, hold on. I got names. I got winners. I got them all over the place. Dan Conrad of Liberty Center. Congratulations, Dan. Thanks for listening. And enjoy your $50 gift certificate to Sidelines. And then congratulations to Terry McCants of Bowling Green. How about that? Terry McCants is going to come and watch probably his Falcons since he's at BG taking on. No, I'm sorry. This is for the Ball State game. Beg pardon. But this will be for the Rockets Ball State game on Tuesday. The Battle of I-75 is, of course, Saturday. But those are your latest winners, and that's all the time we've got. The biggest winner, of course, is Mike Miller, or you, for being able to listen to him. Drive Time is coming up next. We'll see it.